Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
What's going on, No Bad Dog Army? Welcome back to the number one dog training podcast, the No Bad Dogs podcast with me, Tom Davis. Hope you guys are well. First of all, this podcast is with another person that is on the verge of euthanizing their dog and they need serious, serious help. So in my opinion anyway, the conversations that I have with these people are all extremely beneficial, but they're all extremely different. They all have different things because it's like life or death. It's not just I want to optimize. I want to get better. I have questions. This is like, should I keep my dog alive or not? So a young Shiba Inu, this individual, like anybody that is on the verge of doing this, is reaching out desperately for help. And I'm glad that people do. So it's going to be another amazing podcast. We just came out with a brand new professional tug. So if you guys want to purchase that before it sells out, like the treat pouch did that we're trying to restock, you can get the link below. Grab yours while you can. It's a No Bad Dog tug. I worked on it for months to get right. I extended the arm on it last minute. I also made sure that it was big enough, but not too big. Click the link below. It's interactive. It's not a chew toy. Somebody said, well, my dog always chews everything up. This isn't that. This is a way to play with your dog effectively and safely, like you see in all my videos and you'll see in the future. We're also coming to the UK next month. Woo, it's August next month, which I'm really excited about. And we're also doing, we have one more ticket for an intimate in a very small space way with me. And it's going to be a level up program. So we have one ticket left, which is essentially you coming in to basically doing like a little snack in a restaurant privately with me in a room with other people and other professionals. I think Will Atherton's going to be there as well. And it's just a Q&A. And it's about business, it's about life, it's about dog training, it's about your dog. You don't have to have anything necessarily to be there. You just have to get your spot. There's one left. And then we have some tickets left for auditing. And I think we have working spot tickets left, which is very surprising. But this is the last month we're getting down to the wire. I'd love to meet you guys in the UK. Every seminar I do is absolutely just game changing, and I can't wait to come over there to meet you guys, and I can't wait to spend the weekend with you guys and talk dogs and laugh and cry and love. I'm so excited. Link in the description below. I'm going to be answering three of your dog training podcasts as well. So if you guys like this podcast, you listen to it, please do us a solid favor. This is absolutely for free. It takes a ton of time out of my day, but I love doing it. Leave us a review, and I'm also answering questions in the review. So I'll see you at the end of the podcast. Enjoy, everybody.
Honestly, this is going to be a hard one for you, Tom.
Well, I'm excited to get
I'm a little bit like distressed. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I apologize for being late. I lost complete track of time.
That's fine. No, that's totally fine. And then I went back to the email. I'm like, are they saying, isn't it said EDT? But I'm like, I never received a phone call. I'm like, I'm EST. So I'm like, you guys are an hour ahead. I'm like, did I miss it completely or yada, yada, yada?
Nope. I just been traveling the last, I don't know, 6 months, it seems.
No worries.
But
I understand.
So what's going on?
I'm at a point where I have a Shiba. He is a year and I'd say 4 months now. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten to a point where I think, his behavior is kind of neurotic to the point where I'm thinking about euthanasia, but I'm trying to do everything I can before I come to a decision. I'm like, maybe it's my handling or maybe I really want it to be something that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm just trying to like figure it out and talk to people. I've talked to my vet they said, maybe it's time. But I'm like, no, I want to explore all my options before I even make a decision.
Sure. So when you say neurotic, what's going on?
So he has an extensive bite history, and he's gone after me, my family, multiple times, and it started since he was like a young puppy. So we had blood work done from him since I think maybe he was like 4 months, and already had blood work done to see if there's anything in his brain. Came back clean. Do you want me to start like the progression of everything on where to the like to the point where it's gotten now?
Yeah, sure. When he was, did you get him as a puppy, like as a you know, 8-9
week
old?
Yeah, I got him at 8 weeks. Okay. Yeah, I got him at 8 weeks.
Okay, and then
go ahead.
No, yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is when did the aggression start and things start happening?
Yeah, so I got him at 8 weeks, brought him home. So for like backstory, he's my dog, but I still live at home. So there's my brother, my mother, and a father that still live in the house with me. So I brought him home, 8 weeks. He's good for, say, a month or two, mouthing a little bit, but that was just puppy one, teasing a lot. That was okay. And then it got to the point where, well, we started noticing it more, where it happened one day where he came up to me and sat at my feet. And then if I moved, he went after my legs. And when I say went after, it's not like a bite and release. It's like a bite, 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 until I could get a collar onto him and then put him off. That was like the first incident.
Okay.
So he started doing, I'm like, maybe it was like a one-off thing. He was scared or whatever. This is my first dog. And I'm like, okay. So after that, we're a bit more cautious, obviously more cautious. I'm like, this is not going to happen again. But then it started happening to the point where it was around like my family, like he'd do that thing. So at that point he was no longer allowed to be around them. Like the leash was on him 24/7. So then it transitioned from that to essentially, so then he became like aggressive around his food bowl. So I stopped, he was hand fed continuously, and he's still hand fed now because there's just too many problems. He doesn't get a bully stick or he doesn't get any treats unless he's in his crate locked away. So that started happening. So I worked through that problem. The possession around like sitting by someone's feet and then getting up to move, that kind of died down. We worked through the problem where I did this thing where if he used to do that, I would get up right away, like, Koi, come, come, come. And then just try to like kind of distract him and make sure that situation never happened. So that eventually stopped. Another thing that happened that we worked through the problem with was if we're in a living room, this is still after the fact, where he's always on a leash. If someone was to come up to the door, he'd get all alert, eyes would, ears perk up, looking straight at the back door. And then he would charge at the person that he was sitting closest to. I have video footage of one time of this happening because it was to the point where it was like unexpected. So those were triggers where we're like, we can train through this like this. And then I've done that. So we started working with a trainer early. His obedience is fantastic. I can walk him down the neighborhood off leash. He's e-collar conditioned. His obedience is fairly well in my opinion, but so that was happening. So I've worked that problem out, but then it comes to the stuff where it's really scary, where there was the one time where I'm in my room. I'm just chilling on my bed. He's in the room with me. He comes up onto the bed and then he essentially was like trying to maul me. That's kind of what it was, where it was just growl, growl, bite, 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 not let go. This is like a crazy. He had like the call, like the leash on him so I could pull him away, but it was like going after me. And it was like to the point where I was like, oh, I'm not expecting this. Like I wasn't ready for the situation. I'm like, he just hopped on my bed and went after me. And yeah, that was crazy. So he's no longer allowed. So after that point, he's no longer allowed on my bed while someone else is on there. He's never been allowed on the couch. He's had issues there. So there's like a mix between there's triggers that he has that we've been able to train through. And then there's the scary stuff. Like the other day. So then we have like the last little while, I had a 2-month period where we had no incidents. I was really on top of his training. Nothing happening. He's able to play with my family. He's not going after anyone. Like, he's totally okay. And then 2 days ago, actually, this is like after I've already booked this appointment. So we went out in the morning. We went to the dog. So with my trainer right now, whenever I was walking him, he'd always get like super excited around dogs. So my trainer, she has worked with behavioral cases in the past, and she has dogs of her own. So, and she has like a run, like a dog run in her backyard. So what we did was we're just trying to like desensitize him to the dog. So she'd put the dogs in like the run, and then I'd bring Koi out into the backyard, and then they'd sniff, and then she'd be supervising, bring him in. We'd do walking around in circles, not letting the dogs like interact, just healing them around. And then we finally let them sniff butts, and then that was okay. So what she recommended to me was just take him to a dog park. Obviously never go inside, but just walk along the fence and just heal him and, you know, practice that. So whenever we see a dog on the road, he's fine. The only problem is, like, the reason we're doing that is sometimes he would get hyper if other dogs started barking at him, but if the dog was fine, he would just not even care. But I wanted to get getting too excited when another dog was barking under control, so we've been doing that. So that day, we're out, we're doing some training. We did that, went to the park, played fetch, all the stuff. He's running around, super smiley. And then get home, put him into my room. I saw him do something, so I didn't put him into straight, just in my room. He still had the collars on because of all the stuff. I have to keep it on, like, as like, just in case, like precautionary. I come in, sit on my computer. He comes up to me. Like, I'm at my desk, I'm sitting on my chair. He comes up to me. Mouth is closed. And then I'm like, oh, okay. He's asking for pets. He's done that in the past. He's been totally okay. Pet him once, pet him twice. And then he just goes ham on my hands, where it's bite, 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 bite. And it was unfortunate that I had just put his, the remote for his e-collar just out of reach, where it was like, I just had to push him off with the hands and then grab the remote. Then it was very unfortunate. And it was like, there was no warning signs, no growling, no nothing, just right to attack in my hand. And that's kind of where we're at, where there's certain situations where there's no warning signs, there's no growling, there's no nothing, or he just goes for it. And it's like, I don't know how to train that away, or what step should I take to kind of manage more than what I'm already doing.
So I would say typically when these situations happen, it's either neurotic or it's some sort of relationship thing. Now, when he's biting your hands, is he drawing blood? Is he putting you into the hospital? Yeah, what's happening?
I have scars all over my body. He's drawing blood and he's biting hard. He hasn't had to send me to the hospital because he's a Shiba. Like, he can't do that much harm. Like, he'll break skin and it's painful and it's scary and it's crazy, but it's never to the point where, like, he'll never send me to the hospital. But he's fucked up my hands. Yesterday, yeah. The 2 days ago, like, my hands are, like, fucked up. Like, if I sent you pictures or we're on FaceTime, like, you could see just the damage that he's done, and it's just not okay. And he's done that. He's, like, gone. So another thing that I should mention. So there's been times where during the last two months, like, I took time off work because I'm like, hey, this dog is, I need to do something about this because it's not sustainable. It's not fair to my family. So I took time off work. I'm still off work right now. And I'm fully focused on, I'm like, hey, I need to do something. I need to train or do as much as I can because I don't want to give up on them. But I'm getting to the point where it's like, is it even something I can train away? So within that 2 months, he's muzzle trained as well. within the house, we'll be fine. He'll be on his e-collar and stuff. And there was, and usually when no one else is in the house, that's when I drop the leash and I let him, you know, explore like the main area. I saw the remote in hand. My brother came down, unbeknownst, like he didn't tell me that he was coming down. I've told my family, hey, if you're going to come downstairs, just let me know. I'll grab the leash so I can manage the situation. Mm-hmm. He didn't let me know. Came downstairs. Koi was just in the kitchen with me. My brother walks into the living room, says a couple words to me, and then Koi bolts right for him, goes for his legs, drew blood, pretty deep gashes. And then, you know, it was just like, it was so fast. There was no warning sign, no growl, no nothing. It was like a mm-hmm. right from a down into bolts right at him to bite him.
Okay. When these things are happening, what do you do? Mm-hmm. What's your game plan?
So this one was like completely, I'm like, yo, this is not going to happen. I didn't expect anyone to be down there. So it might have been my fault that I'm not on it, but usually it's as soon as he gets up to go, because there's been times where I'm holding the leash. I'm like, okay, maybe we can do something. And then I correct him on the e-collar. As soon as he got up from, like, say if he was in a down, I correct him right there before he would get to the person. And then he's responded that way before, like where he stopped. And it's like, oh, okay. But like, so that was the situation. I'm like, I got him. But this one, it was, I didn't know my brother was down there. And then Koi just went before I could do anything. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, so in incidences where you're talking about here in the recent past,
mm-hmm.
has he been corrected for these things, or is he just going right at it?
No, he's been corrected for these things, and then he stopped while the correction's like been in time. So it's happened once before, and then after that, I'm like, okay, no, if he's going to be around people, he's going to be muzzle trained. So if it was to get up, I can correct him right away and don't have mm-hmm. to worry about him drawing blood.
Right.
So we've done the muzzle training, so I can put it on him, and that's okay, and it's like, totally fine. He just gets mopey all the time. So while like all this happening, I'm like, no, whenever he's going to be around other people in the house. So I should just preface this by saying he is the most perfect dog whenever we're not at my house. He's been desensitized to patios. We've been going to the mall. We go to the park all the time, exercise. He's completely like, I'd say he's almost perfect when we're not at the house.
Okay.
Like all his problems are just like either in the backyard or inside the house. And so that's kind of what leads me to like, is it really or not neurotic, or is it just something in my handling that I'm not able to get?
Yeah, it's probably more of that. It's probably more, to me, it seems like it's more relationship and
okay.
And that sort of thing, because if you're not seeing it, behavior in dogs, like one of the first things anybody should ask themselves, especially if they're having problems with their mm-hmm. dog behaviorally, is if it's not consistent into one mm-hmm. place or the other, like if your dog is reacting only under certain circumstances, that means that mm-hmm. environment is what's causing the behavior. Or in some cases, that environment may be the only time the dog feels comfortable, vulnerable, insecure, fearful enough to react. So when we talk about behavioral euthanasia, we talk about a dog that is not safe to the general public, and their life is mm-hmm. Not good, and they're not having a good time at life. But the fact mm-hmm. that you can bring your dog out to patios and other places and other people's homes and parks and whatever the case is and not have any incidences tells us that mm-hmm. it's more situational and environmental than anything.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Now that's just historical, right? So again, like let's say we have I'm looking at this from my point of view. Okay. We have a dog that is biting people, biting you, biting family members. And then you're like, the only time this has happened is in my home. And in fact, when I mm-hmm. take my dog off property, he is the best dog ever and has no problem. So that means that there's something going on other than the worst case scenario of having like a neurotic screw that's loose. In my experience and in my opinion, which are the same thing.
That's why I'm calling you.
Yeah. So that's a good indicator of a variable of, oh, well, my dog is, it's kind of like, there's an unbelievable amount of things that I could relate this to, but it's like, yeah, you know, my muscle only gets hurt. My muscle only hurts when I do this one thing. I'm like, okay, so that means your muscle doesn't hurt any other thing. So the number one thing that's making your muscle hurt is this one thing. Like, yes. I'm like, all right, we need to work on this particular thing so we don't do that motion, so we don't, you know, whatever. So it's a very isolated, very pinpointed thing. And that's, and again, from a behavioral standpoint, that's good. And if the question of behavior euthanasia, I mean, again, if it's like, oh no, my dog has the ability to be very successful everywhere else but home, then that tells you that that's a, there's some sort of thing that's throwing off and dehinging your ecosystem at home. And that's why these things are happening. There could be, probably, I would say off the top of my head, like 3 to 5, you know, big things that typically happen because of that. But that's just my point of view from the far out looking in.
Totally. So like what kind of things would I be like looking at there? Like what kind of, like what are some of like the biggest things that would cause like such an unbalance in the relationship?
It would be the relationship between your dog and whoever should be making decisions. And that's a, I say that lightheartedly about like whoever's in charge, because whoever's in charge, I don't know, it just doesn't sound that great. But the reality is like, let's say this is your kid and you're having friends and family over, and then your kid decides to get up and haul off and just smack somebody over the head with a baseball bat. Your responsibility, because it's your son or your daughter, you're the one who should say, hey, what do you think you're doing? And then the response to that thing, and I'm putting it in human psychology for a reason, because it's the easiest thing to explain. You're, let's say you're the only person there responsible, whatever. You have friends over, your kid gets up to go wallop somebody over the head with a baseball bat. I don't think anybody else in the group is going to be like, you should say, hey, what are you doing? Stop. Yeah. And then, so there's one, that's the one thing. The second thing is does your dog at that point respond to you? Like, what's the response? And again, I'm putting this into human psychology. Let's say the kid turns around, sticks his tongue out, whoosh, whacks your buddy over the head with a baseball bat and says, yep, I don't care. That's the problem typically. Yeah. So to answer your question, that is typically the problem. I've done so many of these sessions and things, and that's typically the problem. I mean, I've done a, recently did a podcast last week about how dogs get to where your dog is at. And then the very other next day-ish, literally somebody was like, I did every single thing that you said to not do in your last podcast, and now I'm, I canceled the appointment to euthanize my dog today. So it's
I listened to good. All your podcasts. And the reason that I'm calling is because he knows, like, he will go in place. We have boundary work. We have everything. I can, like, so there's been times where he's gotten up just to like walk around and I'm like, okay, maybe this is like something going on, and I can just recall him and then he'll come sit by me. But I don't want to like, just continue. I'm just saying, like, I've listened to that same podcast that you're talking about. And it just, the things that you talked about in the podcast were just like, just basic obedience. Koi, he has all that even in the house.
Yeah. Well, there's much more to it than the basic obedience. There's that's the first step, is the basic obedience. But again, why do some dogs unravel this way? I should say Shibas are notorious for being extremely difficult dog to train. I have said since I've been in this professional career that I'm in that they are the top hardest breed dogs to train, period. And I've said that consistently over the years. So that's the first thing. They are very challenging.
Okay. Yeah.
Secondly to that, he's young enough. Is he? You said he is fixed, right?
Yeah, I got him fixed as soon as, I think it's what, 6 months, the earliest?
Yeah.
Whatever the vet said, like, the earliest that he's allowed to get fixed, he was fixed.
Yeah, that's good. And he, but he's also at this adolescent stage too, which is kind of, you know, like a teenager. And so he'll see these things start to spark up. But anyway, going back to the basic obedience, it's more than just basic obedience. It's sometimes when you have a dog that doesn't like other people. So let's just refrain and say, okay, your dog doesn't like other people or whatever. So that means you do what a lot of other people do when they have reactive dogs, is you have to manage the systems around you. And to some it's overwhelming, to others it's just kind of an inconvenience, and to others they're happy that they have found a system that they can keep their dog alive with because they're great with them. But when situations do alter, so I always talk about having the most aggressive dog in the world, but also having the control. So again, like somebody comes down the stairs, your dog flies off the hinges, you have to be able to stop that in that moment, and or make sure you have clear boundaries with the people that you're living with, because that's the other thing too that I personally think that this is probably 35% of the problem is you're living in a, so again, like you said, like this doesn't exist outside the home, which tells me that if you moved out, none of this would happen. We wouldn't be having this conversation. And then also too, you know, the other side to that, or the other flip of the coin, is simple, is if you are going to stay where you're at, there has to be stricter rules on your end with the dog, and then of course with the people that you live with. And again, I'm just the middleman here. I'm like, I have zero idea if you have 75 people living with you and they're all, you know, irresponsible or not. That doesn't matter to me as much as that's just kind of beyond this conversation that you'll, you know, have with yourself later on of like, how is that going to be possible? And is it going to be possible? Because that's to me, like, I always think about it, to be honest, because there's a dog that lives at my facility. His name is Hawk. He does not like people he doesn't know. He adores to know and the people he does know. And it's an unbelievable contrast. And to be honest, I haven't really seen it before. But we've tried them in other homes and it doesn't work. With me, I always think in the back of my head, man, I wonder if I can just bring him home. Because he loves me, he loves my wife, but and he loves my dog. Yeah. But I know with my revolving door of a house, it would never work. And so I know that I would never bring that dog into my home because he would be put down, because he would ultimately, I mean, even before that, he would hurt somebody. So I guess my point is you just have to make those decisions on your personal end of, you know, like, what is it worth? Or, and, or to me, judging by what you're telling me, and, or the other thing is rehoming the dog before euthanasia, because what you're telling me is this doesn't happen anywhere else. So if somebody else restarted a life with this dog and the dog's like, okay, whew, I'm out of that situation and it doesn't happen, great, because that is a very real thing in this conversation, only because it's only in this one place. And so that one place creates the problem. That's the variable. That's the trigger. Now, why that is, again, you'll have to continue to peel off layers. But again, I think management is a big piece to what you're dealing with, and just making sure like you're treating this dog like a trained police dog. Like, that's how I would be treating him, like a trained police dog at my son's third birthday party. And he's in the house and I'm like, on top of it. Or, and, or just like, you're going to go in a place where nobody can find you, and vice versa. So but you don't, you have a one in almost year and a half year old Shiba that if he does bite you, it sucks, but it's not like going to kill you. You know, that's the advantage here. That's nice. But I would just say, like, going back to your obedience again, like what you're saying is, and I understand what you're saying is like, oh, his obedience is great. But I'm also saying like his obedience is great until it's not. Cause he's running after the guy coming down the stairs and you saying, hey, come, and he flips you off and bites your brother or whatever. So It's like, okay, yeah. Your obedience is good until you actually need it. And then that's where I also help owners reflect on, I understand what you're saying. Trust me, I've heard it so much. And and usually people are right. I'm like, yes, you have better than average obedience. But obedience, when you have a dog that makes bad decisions, especially aggressive decisions, your obedience has to be 99.9 on lock. And right now it's not, because if he really wants to go, you can't stop him. So there's, so I would argue and go back to the basics of, well, I did call him and he said no. And he, so if your obedience was where it needed to be, especially for a dog like this, that wouldn't have happened. Same thing with some of the other stuff that you've said about no couches, no furniture, that obviously is going to curb him coming up and trying to beef with you for whatever reason. I don't understand that.
I think that's like my big, like my biggest concern ever was, in my room, him coming up and then attacking, no warning, no nothing. This is after a giant play session. This is after a lot of training. He's trained. I mean, like, we just, it's like, it's not that he's not mentally stimulated, because we do a lot of work. Like, we do a lot of healing, a lot of like right side, or like, I think that's like my biggest concern is like the stuff around, like what happens. I'm like, okay, if I see him starting, we can train that away. And that's not something that I'm going to shy away from. I think the biggest concern for me was him coming up in my room, no growl, no nothing, and then went right for my hand. I think that was like the biggest thing. It's like, how do I prepare myself for, or how do I train that away? Like, and that's what I want to learn. I'm like, if I can get that down, then I have no problem managing him, because that's what I've been doing. No one else really interacts with him. I take him out in the morning. I tire him out 2 hours. We'll do walks, and then we'll go, and then we'll play, and then we'll come back. And then he goes into my room, or I'll put him into his crate for a little bit so he can chill out. And then I'll leave him in there for an hour and a half or whatever. And then we'll go out for a little mini walk in my neighborhood, or I have a pretty big backyard. So I'll leave him out there for an hour. We can play around, we play with the hose, whatever. And then whenever he comes in, he's always on a leash. He's always handled. I think that incident was just, I just was not expected for it. Cause I told all my family members, hey, if you're coming downstairs, just let me know, please, so we can work on it. But I just, the thing that scared me, or it just like concerned me, was like the no warning signs, no triggers or whatever, and then coming up and getting me. It's like, how do I address that?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I'm with you. I would say that situation is very hard for me to answer, because I'm just giving you a real answer is hard, because that's a situation where I would really need to see what had happened. Because again, you know, dog owners are like, I don't know where, and this is what happens. And I've just learned over experience that I get that kind of loop often. And I'm not saying that's wrong or it's not correct. I'm just saying that there's a lot of things that, even for you, even if you were to replay it and be like, oh, there was whatever, or not, or there's like nothing. But to me, if you were to stop me on the streets and say, Tom, I have this dog at home that loves me and I love him, and he jumped up on my bed and started going after me, I would just say that has to be, there's no rhyme or reason. So I'm not going to, first of all, it's inappropriate and it never should have happened. And that's not normal. And I'm not trying to advocate for that or even lean into that being like, well, you could have, like, cause there's a lot of things that I do say, you know, well, that is your fault, or half of your fault, or some of your fault, or whatever.
But in
this situation, there's nothing of your, there's nothing that you did was wrong. But if you were to say, what could have triggered this type of thing, I would say that the first thing I would say is your relationship when a dog comes up and bites you has to matter. I mean, that has to be a role here. Like no dog in their right mind, which is key, would go up and do that to somebody. I have seen dogs punk their owners, push their owners, take advantage of their owners, and more importantly, in some cases, pick on their owners because they're brats and they don't have a good relationship with their owner, or they don't have a healthy relationship with their owner. And so some dogs, you could have the worst, and let me give you perspective from a dog guru, if you will. Mm-hmm. Some dogs you could have, and this is most of my clients, you could have the worst relationship with your dog possible and have zero behavioral issues, and you get really lucky. So you could be the type that's like in the podcast that you heard was like, I love my dog, I coddle my dog, I baby my dog, I give my dog no structure, no leadership, no guidance. The dog is mm-hmm. a free for all forever, and then they fall apart. But some people do that and their dog doesn't. They're just like, oh, okay, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing in life, but I have a heartbeat and I'm just going to live until 12. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's no fulfillment, there's no purpose, it's just whatever. That does happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in your case, again, like it's something that I think if you're already working with a trainer, I don't know what you've exhausted and where your relationship is at with this person, but mm-hmm. to me, like, I'd really have to see the dog's relationship with you and how you're handling. But if I had mm-hmm. to answer that question, I would say it's not appropriate. Never should have happened. I don't really have an answer for you, but I will say that I have seen relationships get to a point where the dog is just bored and they're actively picking on people. I've seen them like a cat.
Okay.
They'd go up to a cat, mm-hmm. push him with their nose, the cat would run, they chase the cat. It's kind of like a gaslighting thing. Mm-hmm. The dog gets on the bed.
Yeah.
You don't immediately. So if you look at the way that dogs sometimes, and that's why it's very granular and it's very contextual, mm-hmm. if you will. Some dogs, mm-hmm. let's say there's a dog sleeping on a couch. Let's say it's a young year and a half year old dog. And then the 10-year-old dog comes mm-hmm. up, gets on the couch. The other dog might get down and walk away and go sleep on a bed. Or sleep somewhere else. Mm-hmm. We could all think and talk and chew the fat about like, well, it could be because it's a thin and a thin. It's like, who really knows? But I have personally seen that often. It's where mm-hmm. another dog comes up and the other dog or even the other animal, it's a cat or something, should just leave the area. And they if mm-hmm. they don't, there can be conflict. Now, the secondary mm-hmm. part to that, the conflict can be it is way more rare than the first part. It is very common for one dog to be on a bed or a piece of furniture and then the other dog get up and the other dog just wakes up and goes away and says, okay, whatever. And it's like mm-hmm. that in the animal kingdom and just in general. It's like, hey, this is mine. Oh, okay, it's mm-hmm. yours. Bye. Or whatever. Who really knows? Yeah. But so there could be some light with that. He gets on the bed. Your relationship is already to this point where, you know, it's already, he's getting away with too much and he feels like he can do things and he wants to kick you off his bed. So he thinks, or whatever the case is, and you don't. And then he's like, okay, now I'm pissed. But then you're like, well, he's never done that before. He didn't growl. He didn't give me a warning. He didn't even tell me to get off the bed. And that's not really a personality. I don't know. But what I do know is in a situation like that, again, like I'll reiterate, when you have a dog that has these random act of bad behaviors and it's triggered mm-hmm. by a particular thing. Again, like your couch, mm-hmm. your bed, which you've already done. So this might be a waste of your time, mm-hmm. but sometimes I've had dogs, it's been like a shoe where they're like, you know, I had this one client way back in the day that their son would come mm-hmm. home from practice from a sport. It was a St. Bernard and he would attack the kid. Anytime he smelled like sweat, anytime he worked out, it was the weirdest. I'm like, what? So my point is sometimes it's shoes. Yeah, it was crazy. Sometimes it's shoes. Yeah. Sometimes it's, you know, historically and typically it would be like bones, food dishes, water bowls, toys, where the dog would come up and say, that's mine. And then there would be a fight. I don't know for sure. But what I do know is if you can point out the trigger where you're like, this never has happened ever. My dog has never done this to me, but he has done it and he's done it 5 times only under this circumstance. And then again, mm-hmm. my point of view is being a realistic canine educator, whatever the hell you want to call me, because I'm really not a dog trainer. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, okay, can you take out the variable and the link that's causing all the bad shit? And you're like, yeah. I'm like, well, then let's just do that, because we're going to waste so much time trying to figure out this, you know, cat, dog, Shiba making these really weird decisions, because That's just, you know, that's just the, but now if you see it in other places where it happens other places, that's a different story. But to me, again, reversing and kind of going forward, reversing and going forward, to me, if I have a dog that bites me in any way, shape, or form, they're not getting affection on their terms. They're not getting close to me on their terms. It's very like, we are, we're going to go out and we're going to work, and that's going to be our relationship. So when you're...
That's kind of what it's... Yeah. Sorry, I think that's kind of like what it's been like for the, at least for the last, I want to say like last like 4 months, where the relationship is like, okay, so we never cuddle. That's just a Shiba thing, but like regardless, never, no cuddling. He's not allowed to do that. He's not allowed to do anything. He doesn't jump up on people. He's pretty neutral when guests come over. That's not a problem. So I guess my question is, how do I build a better relationship with my dog, or what are some exercises that I can do to kind of, you know, reset our relationship? Because maybe that is a thing, because it is only in the house. Like, I can go to a beach and I can downstay him, and then I can walk 30 feet one way and he's not going to move a muscle when there's other dogs running around, there's kids running around. And then, like, I guess, how do I reset my relationship in the house?
Yeah.
Because outside, like, he's great. He's great in the car. Like,
well, I think it's just
fantastic. I
personally think it's just the house. I mean, like you said, like the beach, the car, out, like everything that's good about this dog happens outside of the house, and everything that's bad about this dog, that's deadly to this dog at this moment, is inside the house. So I would agree with that.
I just need some way to, I guess, just like, just restart the relationship. Like, because another thing that I should mention, and I talked about my vet, I went to the vet yesterday, and so I said something about him. Like, he is, like, this is something I've noticed about Koi now, is like, if he doesn't want to be touched, like, it's very obvious. Well, like, I mean, like, if he's in his crate, no one's bothering him. He just doesn't really like to be touched in general. And I think the reason that I've discovered that, when he was a puppy, he didn't like strangers coming up to him. And I'm like, that's fine. Cause but he do the little play bout, and then they try to pet him. I'm like, oh no, he just wants to play bout. And then he just doesn't even want to tell you to fuck off. Like, don't touch me. So that's kind of like where it is, where I'm like, okay, I understand. So no one pets him really. Like, I've understood that he doesn't really want to be pet unless it's like people he knows outside the house. And I'm like, yeah, if like it's one of my friends that he's known since he was a puppy and we're out on a walk or whatever, or in the car, I'm like, yeah, you can pet him. Like, I have no worries outside the house. Like, I want to tell you, if we're on a walk or I'm at a park, I am not stressed at all whatsoever. I'm still on top of everything. I still have his e-collar on. He's been conditioned on like a level 4 on the dog for 2 ADC. So every time I ask him to come, like, if he doesn't, I can reinforce that. But I guess it's just like, so he always licks his lips. So where I was getting to is that it seems in the house, he's always nervous, but I don't know what reason he's had to become nervous. So my vet recommended that we put him on Prozac. So today was the first day he got one capsule. And we're going to try that, maybe ease some sort of anxiety that he has, but I just don't, I think I just need ways to kind of, you know, how do I make this dog less nervous or change what he thinks about the house?
I agree. It's all good thinking. I would say limit the freedom that the dog has will be really helpful. I find that dogs that are, so again, like, X pens are going to be huge, or they would be, like, again, if you were to say, hey, here's this dog, and you just told me everything you just told me over the last 40 minutes, this dog would never, ever have free range in my house until he's proven to not only earn it, but deserve it as well. And that, Go ahead.
I should just preface saying that when he's like around right now, he's like tethered. He's tethered to me on a leash. Like, he doesn't get to roam around the house ever.
But I would put him away from you, because you need to isolate what the problem is, because there's a very good, very good chance that you are the number one problem, 100%.
Okay.
So if that's so again, like, we look at, vulnerable situation. I mean, I don't know. Again, this is the same thing. I try to, like, steer away from when I don't want to, well, it could be these 10 things. I'll just try to go off what I know for sure. And what I do know for sure is there's a big opportunity, or I'm sorry, there's a big likelihood that this dog is, you know, maybe protective or whatever. I mean, that's a huge problem usually, especially for dogs in homes that are, again, like this Shibas are just notorious for being very stubborn and bratty and pushy. Mm-hmm. And like, they're like a cat in a dog's body. It's just how they are.
Yeah. 100%.
So again, like I'd be moving away from that idea, because if you are the problem and then you make him get closer to you, it could make things worse, or it can compound all the things. I would be putting him away from you. I'd be doing the exact opposite. I'd be getting this dog away from you as much as you can. So it's the same type of mentality that I had with a couple dogs I worked with last month, where the dog had separation anxiety. So again, like if a dog has separation anxiety and codependency issues and the dog wants to be next to me, I'm not going to tether the dog to me, because that creates more of the problem. And if your dog is becoming more protective, maybe resource guarding. Mm-hmm. I know you talked about resource guarding in the beginning of our conversation of being somewhat of a thing. So again, if it is you and being inside your house, like the houses for dogs are just big crates. Like people don't realize that dogs are animals, and they look at their home as a big, it's not like, I mean, they have specific spots where they'll eat, or they'll have specific spots where they'll sleep, but they will, like, same thing with neighborhoods. When dogs go in neighborhoods and then they go outside of their own neighborhood, they're not reactive. And that's because that's why dogs mark and sniff and all these things. They have this big, kind of like the animals, like, you know, hawks and squirrels and deer. Yeah. They all have this proximity that they all live in. And dogs, a lot of times, will kind of do the neighborhood as like, this is my home. And so anyway, my point is if you are in your home and your dog is resource guarding you, that could be, again, the compounding thing here. So X-Pen, which is, it's like a foldable little area. Think about like a playpen for a kid, like a child, like a kid, a baby. It's like that. You can get them virtually anywhere, anywhere that sells dog stuff. So
I have one at home.
That's what I would be doing because what it does is it does, well, maybe even three things. But the first thing is it keeps everybody in your house. You don't have to worry about it. So you don't have to worry about the muzzle making him feel like womp, womp, womp. And then you don't have to worry about the dog actually getting to anybody because there's the X-Pen. So, but what it also does in my experience recently for sure is it creates more confidence with the dog, especially with a dog that is, you know, being many things, bratty, insecure. We don't really know. And I don't really know yet, because this is such a complex thing, but that's what I would be doing is tons of structure. Okay. And by structure, it's more of routine based. So the dog, anytime that you're not training with the dog outside or inside, I would be putting this dog in this X-Pen, and you can make this X-Pen huge. You can make it as big as you want.
Okay.
I typically,
So would you prefer him, because right now, say, whenever I have to leave the house or I need to do something where I'm like, I'm not watching him, even just like sometimes throughout the day, I'm like, hey, I just need a break from Koi. I'll just put him into my room, and like not even in the crate sometimes, but I'll just put him into my room. But if I have to leave the house or I can't watch him, then he goes into his crate. So you're saying just X-Pen, like say in the living room or something, or like in one of the laundry room, just like put the X-Pen in there and then.
Yeah, I would. That's the first thing I would do is just make this dog not feel like they are tethered to anything. And if your room is that place of, you know, I don't know. I find a lot of dogs who are a one-person dog in a home of other people, their room becomes their space. And you might want to start removing that of like, no, you're going to be, so you can put it anywhere. But again, like you have to think about the other people that live with you to make sure that it's not going to be inconvenient. Because to me, like I would just find a place in the living room, put the X-Pen on one end, put the other end up, put him in there, tell your family like, hey, this is where he is. And then throughout the day you would go bring him out, train him, work with him. But I would just be treating this dog like a military Malinois or whatever. Okay. That, because that's what he needs is, so going back about 15 minutes ago when you asked, how can I restart things? This is how you would restart things. Mm-hmm. You would take away the dog's freedom because he doesn't deserve it. It's going to get him killed. Yeah. He's making really bad decisions.
Yeah.
He's roaming around and he's like, who can I mess with today? Who can I mess with now? And again, rather it's a screw loose, we don't know yet, or if it's maliciousness and boredom and insecurity or whatever, it doesn't matter. If he is isolated and he's set up for success, you're not going to have to deal with the problems that you're dealing with. And it's just like a puppy. Okay, think about a puppy. Puppies in the X pen, puppies in the crate, because we don't want the dog to pee and poop on things. We don't want the dog to chew on something and to get into stuff. We don't want the dog to get into something that's going to ultimately hurt them, so on and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So what do? We put them in this. Same thing with kids. I have a baby. It's the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. We went to the beach. You're here because there's seagulls and there's waves and there's hot sand and there's this and there's the sun. And it's just like, you're in this area to keep you safe. And until you can learn how to do shit on your own and to be an adult or whatever, you're not going to come out of here. And this is, oh, I don't want to, doesn't matter. This is where you're staying. So that's what, exactly what it's like for a dog that, you know, is making bad decisions. Like, oh, I'm always getting sunburned and going to the hospital after, and I'm always stepping on hot sand, and I'm always this, that, and the other thing. Okay. Well, then this is where you're staying. Like, you have to put him into this corner or into this area in the house where he can't make mistakes. And then that way, you know, like clockwork, my dog is in this area where he's going to be safe. Nobody's going to go in there and mess with him and take him out. And your family or whoever you're living with can live their lives without worrying about what's going to happen. And then it takes the stress off of you, because he doesn't have a muzzle on. He's not confined to a small crate. So if you're working hours, long hours, if you're, you know, even going out for a run or taking a shower or whatever it is, you don't have to worry about that either, because he's in this little area. And he also has, you know, room to be a dog. It's fine. I mean, he's a dog that's like, your alternatives are to let him continue to make mistakes and then put him down. So it's like, okay, he's going to be fine in here. But that's what immediately what I would start doing. That's part of it. The other part is creating that routine and that obedience and that, and I call it structure as a general blanket, but it would be whatever you can do around your, I don't know your schedule, I don't know what you do, but whatever you can do around your schedule that makes sense, that's what you would do. But you have to go out and start training as well, because in order to help a dog find its way and find its place, you have to go out and train. Where do I fit in? You know, it's like, oh, well, I don't want to play soccer, but I don't know if I'm a defender. I don't know if I'm an offense. I don't know if I'm a midfielder. I don't know where I'm supposed to be. I'm like, okay, well, let's go practice. Let's see how you kick. Let's see how your defense is. Let's see how, you know, whatever the case is, that's exactly what you're doing with this dog, is you're going to go out and you're going to find the missing pieces. It's exactly what I do with any dog that comes into my facility with a behavioral issue. It doesn't matter how big the spectrum is. I say, let's go to the back room. Let's see you work with your dog, because you working with your dog in front of me will help me gauge where you're at with this dog. So those are some things that you have to start doing, is holding the dog accountable realistically to keep the dog, you know, into place. So when you're out and you're training, let's say in your backyard, I know you have the e-collar, but what else are you using?
So he's also been like, we've used the Hermspringer, we've used the Prong before, but like we've transitioned like with the trainer. So what I've noticed previously, he's like super skittish. So whenever he had the Prong on, he'd always be looking after his shoulder. And I'm like, maybe it's just annoying him. It was just while it was on. So we transitioned to the plastic pinch collar, and that works, but like the same problem still is happening. So the trainer's like, you know what, let's try it on the flat. And then he responds fairly well, just on the flat collar, but I still always have the pinch on me. So that's kind of, and then he has training with his foot weight. So a lot of the times if it's, you know, I'm like, for a second, I'm like, okay, you can go pee poo. I'll take collars off and I'll let him go. And then whenever I have to go out to grab him, I'll put a slip on, and that's how I, you know, bring him if we have to go to the car or like, so he's trained on, I've tried a lot of tools, and I've worked with the trainer and it's been great. I should also mention that maybe it is just in the house, because I was like, you know what, maybe let's try something else. So I sent him to board with my trainer for 2 days, and there wasn't like an issue there. So it's definitely just in the house, and I just, how would I realistically, like, so she's come over like to our house before multiple times, like for different training sessions,
mm-hmm.
and we've tried to recreate all of the, his triggers that I've seen, and he just doesn't do it.
In your house?
Like, yeah, in my house, we've had the trainer come over, and it might just be, the first time I'm like, maybe it's just because it's new. But this is, and then I've had her come over like maybe six sessions later, after he's already been boarded at her house, so he knows her at this point. Had her come back into my house to try to like recreate some of his triggers. Unsuccessful. He just did not care.
So again, sometimes. It could just be, again, like, let's say you brought your dog to your trainer, which you did. You brought your dog to your trainer did a reset, reboot, you know, whatever. I always call myself like the strict uncle, because a lot of the clients that I work with, again, my clients come to me and say, oh, I have all these behavioral problems. I say, well, you have no boundaries. So your dog doesn't give a shit about you. Your dog doesn't listen to you. Your dog doesn't respect you. Your dog doesn't look at you. I mean, there's blah, 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 blah. So then I say, okay, I love you. You're my little buddy. We're going to go for walks, but you're also going to listen. You're also going to be held accountable. You're also going to be crated. And I just give the dog all this really wonderful stuff that helps them be mentally stable. And so sometimes when you're like, okay, you're going to go train. And then once, my point is once the trainer's around, the dog's like, I'm good. Yep, I'm going to behave. It's like having that one parent where we play good cop and bad cop, where the dad or the mom is the enforcer, so they care. They'll hold the kid accountable. They'll punish the kid to some degree. And then they're like, zoop, I'm good. And then when mom or dad are around and they're on the other end of the spectrum, they get away with what they want. They kick, they scream, they throw things, they spit, they talk back, they yell, they scream. And that's exactly how it goes. And that's exactly how it goes for dogs, period. So if that's the case, you just have to make sure that when you're training with your dog, and again, you got to look at the variables to say, okay, if I were to do this, that's what's going to help you big time. And again, anybody working with reactive or aggressive dogs is try to find the triggers and the variables, because that'll help you isolate. It's like a doctor.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm trying to peel off all these layers to figure out exactly the reason why these reactions are happening. So when your dog reacts to exhibit A, and then you bring in a trainer and do the same thing as exhibit A, and it doesn't happen, you go, what are you doing different than me? And it's like, well, this person has had this very particular binary relationship with this dog of structure of like, you know, we're not going to put up with any shit, and I'm going to treat you right, and we're going to be buddies, but this is the way things are going to go. And then if you're kind of thinking, well, because this usually happens in the beginning, the puppy's cute, we get the puppy, we do all the bad stuff, or at least the combination of bad stuff and good stuff. But that's where it happens too, is in the beginning. Again, this is why dogs at 6 to 8 months, just boom. This is when we see the most cases of dogs, is when they're cute. Dog owners just in general, ignorantly, don't understand that they need to start training actually the first week they get their dog. But typically they just wait until there's a problem. So that's one thing that you should really be looking at, is what is different about my trainer being around? Because to me, it's as serious as life or death. This dog is going to be put down or not. So you should be magnifying granularly. What are you doing differently than your trainer has done in the past? And that will help you find exactly your answer.
Yeah.
And I would guess that it's, well, if they actually hold me accountable for stuff, and I'm not going to be bad around them because they give a shit. And sometimes, to be honest with you, their timing is better. So when I say that out loud, I want you to understand that you could be doing almost all the right things, but maybe your timing's off. Like he goes after the I think you said your brother coming down the stairs or whatever. And you don't.
So my brother, he came downstairs, and then he didn't run when he heard him coming downstairs. He was in the living room, and I'm like, oh shit, he just came here, because I didn't hear my brother coming down. Koi was downstayed by me. I happened to put the remote collar down on the counter. I was grabbing some of the fridge, and then it just bolted towards him. So I can understand. I'm totally agreed. Where I'm like, if I had the collar in my hand, I could have corrected it in the thing, and he wouldn't have done it. So that is mine. But yeah, no, I totally understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think
it's just timing.
Yeah, I exactly. And that's where, again, like a trainer would say, mm-hmm. I'm going to set this scenario up. I'm going to say, hey, bro, come downstairs. And then I'm going to do this one or two times. And the mm-hmm. dog's going to say, oh, shit. Because again, like Shiba's just, they're so relentless with being, they're so smart. They're like, I know exactly what yeah. you want. But if you aren't going to do anything, yeah. if you aren't going to do anything about it, I'm gangbusters on whatever. I know what I'm doing is wrong. And I know we've trained for this. And I know we've practiced for this. And I don't care what style of training you believe in or whatever. There's just going to be certain dogs that are like, yep. screw you. Mm-hmm. Do something, bud. Yeah. Like, I don't give a shit. And so again, it's just opportunistic after, you know, one after another, yeah. where they're pushing boundaries. Because again, mm-hmm. it's like you put the stake out, you say, leave it. The dog's like, and then they just wait, boom, and they go after it. And you're like, ah, oh, crap, my timing was mm-hmm. off because your correction was off. If you yeah. corrected the dog at the right time, yeah. it would have. So anyway, mm-hmm. so that's what I think, again, to kind of recoup on what we've been saying. I think that you should give the dog yeah. like hardly any freedom for the next.
Okay.
For as long as you need to kind of reverse things. And then also just make sure okay. that you're limiting to what this dog can do. He's earned nothing. I mean, you love your dog yeah. and your dog loves you. And he's yeah. at a point now where he's potentially going to die because we haven't mm-hmm. cut off the things that are potentially rolling him out into this disaster. So you just have to treat yeah. him like a robot. Like, hey, you're here and don't feel bad. That's what you don't. This is where dog yeah. owners are like, well, I feel he's crying mm-hmm. a little bit, whining. Yeah, okay. Or dead.
No, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, I figured. I just, you know, it's just I talk out loud about everything because I have to give context about yeah, yeah. what we're talking about, and I think it's just mm-hmm. like I want you to understand. Like that's what I'd be tough love, dude, because I do love you and I do. It's just the more every day my son gets older, the more I can relate to what we're talking about. You know, they want to stay out past a certain time. I'm like, no, it's dangerous. That's a bad time. Like, no, nope. Yeah. Nope. And they cry and I feel bad. I know you want to eat my shoe, but you can't because it's disgusting. So yeah. I'm taking it out of your mouth. So you just have to, you know, stick to it. I would do that X pen, and then I would be doing, when you're out, going back to my question of how we rabbit hole into this is the equipment. Whatever you're using, so the slip yeah. collar is fine. You know, a plastic pinch would be a good medium for you. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, yeah. I said I just mentioned that I did have the plastic pinch. We've used that in the past.
I thought you said you used the Herm Springer, and it was...
No, we've done both. So the Herm Springer, he was kind of like fritzy with it. So yeah. we got the plastic pinch and he's kind of still like fritzy with it where it's not like he responds well to it. It's just like he's always looking over his shoulder back at the leash. Like it's not like it looks like it's uncomfortable. Just it's so weird.
How long did you try? The reason why I'm asking is because again,
yeah,
Shibas, Huskies, these dogs are like, this is on yeah. my neck. How long did you try to like push through that?
It was about a week. So every time he was on, like he responded well to it. It was just the fact that every two steps he's looking over his shoulder, not at me where it's not engagement, but it's looking over the shoulder because it's like, what the heck is this thing?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the Herm Springer when he had it on. So I tried that for, I want to say a month, like just leaving it on just around to get him conditioned before I use it. And it was always just looking over the shoulder with both the tools. So it's like, I mean, I'm okay with putting it back on. I put it back on the other day because I knew my timing was going to be better with a plastic pinch rather than the e-collar when I'm training alongside dog just to get him
yeah.
neutral if we're walking by. So I put that on instead of any sort of correction with the e-collar at all. I'm like, the e-collar just for his recall because I can have him run halfway down the beach and then get him to come back in a just like in that realistic scenario. But like, well, that I'm like, so I've used that and I'm like, I guess my only question is what kind of signs should I be looking for? I'm like, oh, okay. He's about to bill. Cause there's no growling. There's no nothing. Like what other small thing should I be looking at? Be like, okay, I should pop him now or I should correct him now before it builds any further. I think that's where my main problem is.
In what way? So when he's building before he reacts to other dogs or because other people?
No, not to dogs. It's like when he just stands up, because all he does is he'll bolt for something. There's no warning sign. There's not any, like, is there other small things that I should be looking for?
No.
Could be like, oh, he's about to go, or should I correct once he lunges and then I'll correct? Because my trainer in the past, like, oh, if you see him building, buzz him there. I'm like, there's some certain things where he's like, he'll do that and I can get him perfect timing, but there's uncertain things where I'm like, he'll just go, and like, at what point do I correct there? Because if there's no warning sign, there's no earning.
Well, I think it's just when he does what he's doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So like, okay, if he's in a downstay and he, mm-hmm, you go to pick up a beach towel, whatever the heck, and he's looking at a person to the left. And so you can't correct him for looking, because it's not really that fair. Because have you trained him to stare down? No. So if you got two options, you either use obedience to avoid a situation and de-escalate it. So again, like it's a lot of de-escalation that we do with leash reactivity, and the dog is looking and you're like, okay, hey dog, come. And the dog's like, okay. And they come to you. So you may be de-escalating the situation before something does happen, or you just hold and you wait. Yeah. And if he goes again, you're watching him, you're timing, because again, like it doesn't matter how good your obedience is. I shouldn't say that. It does matter how good your obedience is, but there's still going to be an opportunity where a dog isn't going to be 100%. Even my dog, like, let's say again, I can control her 99.9% of the time, but what if she's in a downstay in my cul-de-sac, and then a dog that I didn't see coming, and I go into the garage to throw away something, and the dog's, you know, running, and then, you know, whatever. I mean, there's things that you can't control, or somebody comes up to try to pet him and there's a reaction or whatever. So again, like, you just have to think of the situation and what it could be. And if you're like, okay, this could be bad because this person is approaching us or whatever, but it sounds to me like you haven't had a really hard time being outside of your home. So if this was inside the home,
even with like when people are outside, I'm like, especially when we're outside, I'm like super aware of everything, where it's like people coming up, I'm like, hey, we're training right now. Just don't pet them, please. Like, if they try to come up, I've swatted hands, I've stepped in front, I'm body block the other person trying to get the collar. I'm like, I just, you know what? We're not going to have a situation outside, because if he bites someone outside the house, it's immediate. Like, he'll be taken away, put down, whatever. So it's like, that's always been, you know. But no, I don't know. Thank you for everything, you know. Watched you before I even got Koi, got him. We did your puppy course and everything, and been great. But no, thank you for, I guess restarting the relationship.
Yeah, well, I think that you have first of all, I think that you have everything that it takes mentally to be successful with the dog, because I talk to a lot of people, and sometimes I can just tell it goes right over them. I'm like, okay, good luck. Unfortunately. Yeah. But I think that you have everything it takes to be successful with this dog, but just understand that this conversation is a roadmap for you, not a solution. Yeah. So it's solutions.
No, I totally agree.
So when you start working with him, you should be personally, I would write out, okay, X-Pin in the morning, you know your schedule. I don't know what you do. So it's like, this is your schedule. This is how you would do it. And you'd roadmap the whole thing out, and you'd plan and schedule the whole thing. And then that way, again, you can share it with your family to say, hey, this is the deal. And again, like, you just keep him safe, where you're like, hey, inside the house with other people, he's sketchy. Okay, can we put him in an X-Pin and he can't get out and do it? Yes, boom, done. No furniture.
Okay.
When you are going to be interacting with him, it's going to be something constructive. Like, I'm not going to be, because again, like, you see like the really bratty kids and the bully kids. You're like, hey man, how are you today? And they're like, what do you mean? How am I today? How are you today? Why would you be asking me that? They're just assholes. Some of them are, they just want to fight with you. Right. And sometimes dogs can get into those moods, or dogs can get into that state of mind because of, you know, whatever. But one of the, say, hey, this is your leash. This is your collar. Good job. I got my treats. I got whatever you're motivated by. We're going to go out. We're going to work. You're going to come back. You're going to go back in. One thing that we haven't talked about, and I'll just touch on really briefly, is physical exercise. So half of this battle of outletting and training and everything else is going to be that physical mm-hmm. exercises. So you just have to make sure that when the mental stimulation and rebuilding that relationship that way is great. But you also have to, the other big piece to that is making sure that you are giving him the mental stimulation. So he's got to get that out of his system. Mm-hmm. So lots of walks, exercise, fetch, frisbee, whatever he likes.
I think honestly that he has ample of, if not too much during the day. What's the right balance? Because it's in the morning, we'll go out for 2 hours, and then during midday we'll go and we'll, you know, go for another hour, and in the night we'll like, you know, go out and then do more training, and it's like training and play. Well, we'll go to a park, we'll play around, and we'll do training, and then we'll play again. And it's like, I don't think he's actually, like, I just don't think his physical and mental requirements, at least in, I may be wrong, but I think, like, I'm not, it's like he's getting trained at intervals, like, throughout the day.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, that's good. I would be doing 10-15 minute training sessions, and then I would be pretty much pushing him to his physical limit on another training session. So think about it like a fighter. Like, you're going to go out. Today's going to be cardio.
Okay.
Tomorrow's going to be speed. Tomorrow, you know, whatever. So that's what you would do throughout the day. Is you'd say, okay, this session when you're out is good. That's what I do with Lakota. When I'm out, and one session is going to be just chuck it, and I'm going to go until she wants to flop. And I'm not going to train because they're two different things. And then maybe the next time I bring her out, it's going to be obedience and training and tug and things like that. So you just switch them up.
Okay.
But you intermittently do them throughout the day.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Fantastic.
So put everything into structure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Put everything into place. Yeah. Keep us posted. And I think you'll be fine.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate all your help, and I love your videos. You know, you're doing a great job, and I think you're one of the best out there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right, man. I appreciate you. Good luck with everything. Keep me posted. Again, I think you can do everything. And remember, after this month or 2 months or whatever, you're going to be putting this into place. The next step isn't euthanasia. The next step would be rehoming, because this dog only acts like this in the house. Everywhere else, this dog is fine. Okay. So there's something going on there. There's something there. So
got it.
Just think of that. Okay.
Understood.
Okay, man.
Understood, totally. All right. Thank you, Tom.
All right. You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye. All right. You've reached the end of the podcast, which I'm going to answer your dog training questions. First one comes from Amanda 54364. Hey, Tom. 5-star review. Thank you. Thank you for all the information you put out there. You're doing an amazing job putting things into context. It has helped me realize what we did wrong in our previous dog and want to focus on and do things right with our future puppy. We're getting an 8-week-old German Shepherd. I'm a homeschooling mom, and I have 3 kids, 7, 4, and 2. My question is what do you recommend as a schedule for the first couple of weeks to build a relationship? Are there certain exercises or drills you can use to help the relationship, especially with kids involved? It's a great question. Appreciate you listening. So as you listened in this podcast and in future podcasts and previous podcasts, don't wait for there to be problems. Don't wait for your German Shepherd to be 80 pounds and reactive. And I know you're not. It's good. It's a good thing. Good piece of community building here is we're all kind of like, it's a thing I'm really proud of the most is just, you know, we're all on the same page where it's like, it's not even, it is my opinions and experiences, but it's also just, you guys are hearing and seeing on my channel, and especially here on the podcast, is dog owner after dog owner after dog owner after dog owner times 1,000. This is what I did wrong. Here's what I'm dealing with. And it's like, happens every time. So obviously learn from the mistakes of others. I think that that's really important. That's pretty much my job, is to almost exploit, like, this is what they're doing, so don't do that. Here's how to do it right, which is really helpful. And so I would just say, starting off with leash pressure. So I'd just get like a martingale and a training leash and start off with like 5 little minute sessions on impulse control. It's going to be really difficult in the beginning because the puppy's going to be skating across the floor trying to get the food and try to get the things and whatever. And so you just work on impulse control with kibble or the bowl. You know, just with starting off with sit, okay, good sit, and then we're going to do sit and stay, okay, good sit and stay, and then you would just continue to kind of roll through. The Kickstarter course would be great for you. That's going to be huge, actually for you guys, because we started off with a puppy in that course, and we just taught people, like, hey, here's the five things that you should start with. It also is a really nice blend of obedience mixed with relationship building skills at the same time. So the Kickstarter course is great. All my courses are always in the link in the description. And then again, just like 5-minute sessions, working on thresholds, working on break, working on healing. Don't wait. Get a martingale, get a leash, start training immediately. And the schedule should just be throughout the day when you have time. The crate training schedule should be also in place, as well as the X-Pen. I might put together like some sort of mini free course on how to do that, but that would be really helpful for you guys, is just crate training and X-Penning to make sure that the dog is safe. So when you're crate training, it would be the... So just time it. Like, the dog eats and drinks, they're going to have to pee and poop immediately. So as the dog grows up, they can hold it for longer periods of time. So just make sure your schedule is appropriate and set your dog up for success. Don't, if you bring your dog outside and they don't pee and poop, don't come back inside until they do one or the other. And then you bring them back in, and then in 15 minutes you bring them back, or 20 minutes you bring them back out. And you just, that's what I do with puppies, is I will schedule their food. So in the morning they'll get, I limit their water. I obviously limit their food to training. And so once I'm done training, I'll give them water. I'll put them in the crate for 15 minutes. I'll get them out. I'll go for a short little walk around the block, and then they'll go pee and poop. And then we come back in, and then they crate again, and then they rest. So you have to transfer. I'm sorry. You have to, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, but you have to do a little bit of rest time, 'cause it's a baby. You have to do a little bit of training. You have to do also training with the crate and the X-Pen to make sure that the dog is successful for potty training. Because when they're a puppy, you have to do everything at once. Relationship, obedience training, potty training, all that stuff. And then by the dog's 5 to 6 months, all the training will be done. Your dog will be happy and trained, and you will be happy with the trained dog. And then the rest of the life is history. You know, everything's good. So just remember all those things. Again, the Kickstarter course would be really helpful. And then I'm thinking about doing maybe, I don't know, nobody really, I shouldn't say nobody, but not a lot of people in my community, it seems, like the puppy stuff. Because I've just curated a big audience of behavioral stuff, which is fine. It's what I specialize in. I shouldn't be curating a bunch of puppy stuff. But anyway, so that's my answer on that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the review. Excuse me. Next question comes from Brendan K. Weaver. 5-star review. Hey, I have a 6-month-old German Shepherd, and I've been listening to you since she was 7 weeks old. Your tips and suggestions have helped more than I can put into text. She is 60 pounds already and is supposed to be big, and I've been super hard on training since the day she came into me and my girlfriend's house, because I refuse to have a large obedient dog. She is not reactive to humans at all, just to dogs a little bit. I may have over socialized her, and now I feel like the root of this is she expects to be able to play with dogs that she sees. I think this is because a couple of times they were off leash dogs, and when they got to us, she just played and it never was aggressive. Normally, when the other dog is leashed, she will sit there and bark hard and continuously look back and forth between me and the dog. If it's on a walk, she will stay in a heel while doing it. And if it's in public space, I can tell her to sit or lay and she will stay. But I can't get the barking to stop. Is there a way to fix this? Am I being too hard? I've been told by a lot of people she's just being a puppy and it's not big of a deal. I would partially agree. 6 months old is old enough to understand between right and wrong. So I would be the dog is a puppy, and I would be avoiding, if you're not going to let them play and you're not going to let them interact, which, you know, for most dogs that you see, especially dogs you don't know, it's probably all of them, because you don't want anything bad to happen. Because the amount of story, that's a good thing about the podcast, is you're going to hear all the data being collected over and over again about things that happen in dog parks and things that happen with off-leash dogs. And so I would just say, you can work on the correction on the leave it. work on your payment. So with a puppy at 6 months, the dog should be food motivated. And then it's also safe and fair to correct the dog if they're doing things inappropriately. So if they're like bark, 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 when they see another dog, leave it, correction, turn, inside turn, go away, come back, put the dog in a sit, pay the dog if they don't bark, and just kind of wheel and deal that routine there. And then if it is a dog that they're going to play with and be friendly with, you just break the dog and then let it happen. So I don't think it's being too hard. Like, if the question is am I being too hard on my dog for not letting them play with every other dog they see? No, because that's not realistic and it's not safe. But you could correct your, I mean, is it appropriate for a dog to habitually bark on leash towards other dogs? No. Your dog to be stimulated, your dog to be vocal, yes, but not sit there and ruin your day because your dog is barking. So I would be countering, my leash reactivity course should be done by the end of this month. So that's going to be my number one course that I'll be pushing people to because it covers the majority of my questions that I have. So, next one comes from JHer47, best realistic dog trainer, 5-star review. Thank you. Hey, Tom, I've been watching your videos and listening to your podcast for almost 2 years. You've educated me so much and opened my eyes to the reality of pet owners and the issues on dog behavior. But I don't have my own dog yet, but I'm taking lots of notes because I will be owning a dog with reactivity issues. So short story, my sister owns 3 dogs, a 7-year-old rescue, 2-year-old litter mate, Great Danes. One of the Danes is a neutered male and has really bad resource guarding of my sister. And whenever she gives affection to the older dog or the other dog, but not the little sister mate, there's been fights, bite history from both the male Dane and older dog because the male Dane has an issue with the older dog and the older dog only attacks back to protect herself. I honestly think he doesn't consider the older dog as his pack and that's why he attacks her randomly sometimes. But the older dog also doesn't like other dogs. In my sister's house, she doesn't have any boundaries or obedience on the dog. So coming to her house is a total nightmare. Yep, you get 3 mini horses living together with no obedience or boundaries. No, thank you. All the three dogs have not been together for a little over a year, and helping my sister with these dogs has not been great. So my question is, since I'll be owning one of the dogs, the male Dane, he doesn't get along with older dogs or his... but his sister is fine with the older dog. Can I have a closer relationship with him since I'll be taking him eventually when I get my own place, or will that make the older dog jealous, frustrated because I'll be paying more attention to the other dog and not all of them? I'm confused. Are you living together with your sister? Let me just rewind to the question. All right. So my question is, since I'll be owning one of the dogs, the male Dane, since he doesn't get along with the older dog, but his sister is fine with the older dog. Okay, so there's 2 Danes. One of them doesn't get along with the older dog. One of them does. You're taking the one that doesn't get along with the older dog. Can I have a closer relationship with him since I'll be taking him eventually when I get my own place? Yeah. Closer relationship than what? That's what I don't understand. Can I have a closer relationship with him since I'll be taking the dog? Yeah. Or will that make the other dogs jealous and frustrated because I'll be paying more attention to the other and not all of them? I'm confused by this because if you're, unless you're living together, I'm confused. So what you're asking is if you're taking a dog out of the house and they're not going to see each other again, I don't understand how the other dogs could be jealous or frustrated that you're giving a dog in a different location attention. How would they care? How would they know? I don't understand that. So I'm confused on that because I'm reading it a couple times and that's the way it's written. I'll be taking this dog into my own place. Will that make the other dogs jealous and frustrated because I'll be paying more attention to the other dog and not all of them? I'm so confused by that. So if you want to rewrite this, I'd love to help you. But right now, if you reread what you wrote, and I'm not saying that I'm right, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying I don't understand this. You taking a dog to another location in another house is not going to affect, if you're petting your dog in your house, the other dogs in another house and another property is not going to know that that's happening or give a shit. So that's my answer of how this question is actually written. I'd love to help them, but it's very overwhelming when all three dogs have their own individual issues. So what can I do to help the situation? I do want to note that the litter mates have very bad litter mate syndrome and they coexist without each other, without my sister, because no boundaries. Yeah. So if you want to rewrite this, just to the question, it'll be really easy for me to answer. I just, from where it's written, the way that you wrote it, it says, once I remove the Dane that has a problem with the other older dog from the equation to my own house, are the other dogs going to get pissed that I'm giving my new dog attention in another home? No, not going to care, not going to even know. So if you want to rewrite it to maybe something that is a different question or maybe what you meant, I'd be happy to help you. Thank you guys so much for listening, as always, and I look forward to you listening to my next podcast, because it's a good one. All right, bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.